You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
If you enter my mind for any reason, I will twist your head off and use it for a chamber pot. Are you going to arrest me, Garibaldi?
No way. I want to live to see the future.
Mr. Bonova, Mr. Self, anybody else? Shoot him.
We are star stuff. We are the universe made manifest, trying to figure itself out.
All of this was for nothing. Unless we go to the stars.
Boom. Sooner or later. Boom!
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we review an episode of the 1990s sci-fi TV classic Babylon 5. This week, Season 1, Episode 17, A Voice in the Wilderness, Part 2. I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
And the synopsis for this episode? The situation becomes more tense when an Earth Force heavy cruiser arrives at the station to protect Earth's interest. Captain Ellis Pierce and an alien race both lay claim to Epsilon 3, the planet which Babylon 5 orbits. The fusion reactor on Epsilon 3 begins to act erratically, threatening to destroy the planet and Babylon 5. Meanwhile, the revolt on Mars continues, leading to many casualties. This episode was written by JMS and directed by Janet Greek. This episode was released on August the 3rd, 1994, and takes place in June 2258. The guest stars are the same as last week, but we also have Ron Canada as Captain Ellis Pierce, Denise Gentile as Lise Hampton. Spoilers, she's alive.
That's it.
Akai Aliong as Senator Hidoshi makes a return.
We've seen him before, yes.
Yeah. And Josh Cox as Tech Dave Corwin. He's popping up every 5 minutes. I think he's the guy who sits in the command post, doesn't he?
And turns around
and says, "Shields go down," and things like that. And Chip Heller as Rowdy Number One. Okay, guys, what do we think about this episode?
Well, we think this is the exciting conclusion from last week's episode. It gives us all of the closure that we need from all of the plot points that they had introduced in the previous week's episode. That's it. It's the conclusion. It's the end of the story. It's good. I liked it.
So last week we had the beginning. This week we have the end. Where's the middle?
That's in between the weeks.
It's that frozen scene that I mentioned last week where someone comes in the background and behind Garibaldi when he's completely frozen. That was the middle bit. And then he just asks, to Earth Cruiser, just identify yourself. That was a big build-up to that. That's all he did.
It's a bit strange, really, because, you know, this commander or Captain Ellis Pierce comes in and takes control and says it's neutral territory, but and Earth wants first dibs. Really? Okay, fine.
Yeah, because I guess it's neutral, so everybody can have it. But we're here, and we got a big ship, so you better not mess with us, because we're Earth.
Is it big, though? That ship didn't really seem that impressive or well-armed compared to the station that's right next to it.
Yeah, I mean, some of the Vorlon ships are massive, aren't they? They come through the thing. And why aren't the Vorlons there saying, "You are not ready for this," or something along those lines? You couldn't handle the technology. We have this. It's neutral territory, but we'll have this. And if they did, what would Earth Force then do? You know, would they say, "Well, hang on a minute, no, we're going to fight you now"? And next minute, a big war appears, and if the Narns had come in and said, "That's ours," do you think Sinclair would have liked that?
Right, and I was expecting, because Malari was so interested in what they had found down there, I was expecting all kinds of Centauri ships and maybe a Minbari ship and some Narn and just all kinds of different races. They're all coming to see what's going on, but nobody does.
No. They managed to keep it very quiet. And even, you know, Delenn, who's obviously part of the Grey Council, has, you know, she could have a vested interest in this, but you know, obviously at the end she does, but so that all works out. But it's a strange thing where nobody really sort of acts on the information that there's something big down there. Mallari's got a little bit of an interest because he's not sure what it is. As an ambassador, would you go down yourself or would you send somebody else down to look at it if you didn't think it was that big a thing? You know, it's something down there, but you don't know how big it is. But yeah, so Sinclair obviously you know, doesn't get on too well with his Captain Pierce coming in, taking control, etc. So he sends him away with a flea in his ear. You know, Ellis goes back to his boss and says, oh, he won't let me do it. He won't let me do it. So his boss comes in, you know, Senator Hidoshi, and says, you know, oh, I'm sorry, but it's, you know, it's coming from a higher command than me. I thought, well, yes, there's only the president above you, so the president wants that. How does the president know that there's stuff going on here? I know there's intelligence agencies, et cetera, but who leaked this bit of information to get it back to you know, to Earth? That's a bit, I'd be more worried about that. You know, how is information getting off the station about that? There's only a few people who know actually what's down there. Two to be.
Especially while there's this massive uprising over on Mars. Like, you'd think they'd have better things to worry about than sending anything their way. Yeah.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A flight of ships goes down to Epsilon 3. They all get shot at, and there's all these missiles coming out. And of course, you know, this gets Ellis Pierce a bit annoyed. You know, he's not happy about it at all. And but leave it to Sinclair. First of all, he says, "Oh, you'll need a proper encoded jamming device." Oh yeah. Oh right. Okay. Well, that keeps him, you know, keeps him at bay for a little bit. So Mallari says, "We want some of this." You know, Delenn knows nothing about it, and she's not concerned about it. Drahl is being asked for by the alien guy. The alien guy says, "You know, you're the one." You know, and we actually see the doctor. How long? We were talking about people missing,
right? It's been a while.
It's been a while since we've seen the doctor as well.
It feels like it's been a while. Maybe it hasn't, but it certainly feels that way.
Well, I can't think. I mean, I was trying to think back to when he appeared last. Was it? Would it have been when he had his own, pretty much his own big episode of right at the beginning of the season? We haven't really seen him at all.
What was it? Believers with those religious crazy people?
Yeah, it could well be. Mm. That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
did he have a little bit in Grail when one of the first people were attacked? They figured out how the brain sucking was going on?
Could be.
Might have been, yes. Yeah. But again,
very tiny. Yeah. Very small.
Yeah, yeah. So, wow. I'd forgotten he was even on. We keep going on about, you know, Chicago missing, but the doctor's been missing as well. We haven't even thought about him.
See, this is what it is. This is why Kosh didn't turn up. Kosh, Dakar, Natoff, Lanier, Veer, they're all off on a piss up somewhere and they just happened to miss it. It was just that one week where everyone agreed they were going to have half of you go have a time off, half of you get to stay on the station. It's like Christmas time. That's it.
Yeah, that's right.
Makes sense.
Hmm.
So Sinclair goes to Garibaldi, goes to visit him in his quarters. Did anybody think this was a bit of a strange thing? Because Garibaldi sat in the chair, the door opens, Sinclair comes in, and Garibaldi is literally sat right in front of him, looking at the door. That's his chair. His chair is facing the door. Why would you do that? And it's only about two steps in as well. I mean, what? I've been expecting you, Mr. Sinclair. What's that all about?
He's a paranoid security chief. If he's got the, you know, the line on the door, that'd be right.
Yeah, can't have his back to the door.
Exactly.
That's it, yeah. I thought it was really strange. He's literally about 2 meters away from the door, and he sat looking at the door. We've seen him in his quarters before, watching a television with Delenn, the old cartoons. What? Why is he...
Do you reckon he's continuing the prank from last week where she kept on finding him in the lift? Now it's every time she comes to the door, he's already sat there staring at her.
Tapping his wrist. What time do you call this then?
Everywhere she goes, he's just sat there staring at her.
So then we sort of get an idea now of why Drahl is on board. I mean, he's not seemed to have had anything to do for most of the, well, all of last episode, but most of this episode. You suddenly get an inkling of, hang on a minute, you know, he's the chosen one. He's the one that's going to go down and replace the guy, the alien dude who's obviously put, you know, past his time, and they need somebody else to plug into the machine. So, yeah, there's a bit of a standoff with Ellis again. You know, he's obviously sussed out that there is no need for these jamming devices, et cetera, et cetera. And a ship comes through the jump gate. and scans, accessing all of the language files with this massive scan, like just like they do in Star Trek. There's a great big massive wide beam that goes right across the screen, scanning everything. And they're all blinded by this beam. Oh my goodness. Yeah. And then they say, this guy pops up on the screen and says, "We have been scanning your language files and we now know how to speak your language." And yet the alien dude has been speaking our language quite happily for the last episode and a half. Help me. All that sort of thing. So I don't...
He had more time to study us. He's been down on that planet for ages. You know, he had a bit more time to do his own work. You'd be all right. You know, these new guys, they only just turned up. You know, they haven't downloaded the right Google app, you know, with all the translator circuits. So it's easily done. It's easily done.
And why did he pick English? Why not Narn or Minbari? And my thought is that they're all actually speaking, although it's English, it's what I would call galactic standard. So it's something that everybody learns, so everybody understands it, a bit like English, but it's an English show, so it's an American show in English, so yeah, we get that idea, but...
Federation standard, universal translator.
Yeah, that's right, because all these aliens that have been out there for millions and millions of years talking to each other in a totally different language now have to speak English, because that's the language that these little humans who have just joined us speak.
Don't you know who we are?
It's either that or the entire crew on that ship. Each one of them are making a different broadcast in a different language, just in case somebody else is listening. Mm. So there's an entire crew all speaking the same message at the same time. We just happen to see the English one.
That's a good thought. Yeah, that's possible. Because if you read any of the Isaac Asimov books, he makes it plain that although it's written in English and the people are speaking English, they are actually speaking galactic standard. Every one of them is speaking this galactic standard. Mm. Even the people from Earth have had to convert to galactic standard.
Yeah.
But we're reading it in English, obviously. So.
Throw in a bit of Esperanto, you're all good.
Yeah, that's it. Delenn, Drahl, and Mallari decide to take the Guardian back down to the planet. Because that way, of course, the planet won't attack them. That's how you get past the defenses.
It just knows that the guy is there.
Yeah, that's right. And he's not going to shoot them, not going to shoot himself, is he? So, that's fine.
Who would attack a nice, perfectly purple little shuttlecraft as well? That looked beautiful. So, you know, you won't want to scratch that kind of paintwork.
Mm, that's right. Mm. Yeah, so they get down there and they realise that Drahl is meant to be, you know, or he wants to be, the guy who they plug into the machine, you know, Jue Ex Machina. He wants to be the god of the machine, if you like, to tell this machine what to do and what not to do, etc. And you can see that we hark back to the first episode right at the beginning where he's introduced and he says he wants to make this big, great self-sacrifice. It's the third. What was it, Sean?
The third principle of sentient life.
That's the one.
Self-sacrifice.
There must be only three because, you know, self-sacrifice, that's it. That's the end.
The only thing you do after that, nothing.
So what's for number four then?
Well, he's dead now. He gets better.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. But before they get to the machine, we didn't even see them going through the laser obstacle course, right? They just kind of bypassed that. But when they're walking along the walkway, did you see the dodgy CGI of Mallari with his legs all splayed out? Like, yes. Oh my goodness.
He's walking, but at the same time he's turning and he's still walking. it was pretty hard to see that.
That's what the laser grid did to him. It just completely took out his kneecaps. That's it. He was all over the place.
Don't forget they had the alien dude with them, so the laser grid wouldn't have shot at him.
That's true.
So what they did is they threw him through first, like the rocks, and then run in. You know,
they did your plan first. Yeah. That's what it was.
Throw him through first. No, it's okay. Now, 3-second recharge. So obviously then Drahl plugs himself in, stops the war, and says the time is not right for anybody to have control over such advanced technology. Except for him.
He is the Guardian.
Yeah, that's right. And then you've got to be careful what you wish for, Mr. Garibaldi, because his girlfriend turns up. She's alive. Hooray! He's made up. And she's getting married, or she's got married, and she's got a kid on the way.
Mm.
So that's, cross that one off the list.
Yeah. But it can't be that bad. It can't be bad, my foot. Jesus.
Here's a kiss on your forehead. It'll make it all better.
I wish you were dead, hangs up on her after all of that. Two episodes of trying to reach her.
Oh dear.
Franz, what's a bloody name like Franz?
Yeah. And then Delenn says that Sinclair would have taken the Guardian's place, but his destiny lies elsewhere, which is why they didn't take him down to, you know, to sort it all out.
Where'd the bed be?
Yes, I don't know. And then we never hear about the Guardian on the Epsilon 3 ever again, which is a bit strange.
Yeah. Yeah. Which one of us is taking over from him? Because obviously we are the Epsilon 3. Are we the entire planet? I mean, do we take a third each? You know, is it a rotor system? What do we do?
Does that make us the Epsilon 4?
Oh, I don't know.
It's the three of us and him.
Is he down below in the basement? I mean, it's pretty tall. I mean, I saw the visuals on that thing. I mean, which floor are we on?
Well, I don't know. I mean, Sean's obviously like 4,000 miles away, so it's a different part of the planet.
That's it. That's true.
And me and you're a couple hundred miles away, so we could be in the same sort of area, but you know, I don't know where this guy is. Has anybody seen him recently?
No.
Oh, what if he's okay?
I'm trying to think of something funny, but
it's just Pete. You'd beat.
Sean, I thought it was your turn to take this food down to him. Have you not fed him?
Oh, I think I forgot. No.
There's always that one thing.
I thought I felt some rumblings before. It was his stomach going,
there's food. Rumbly in his tumbly.
I think it's a good time for us to take a quick break and insert a promo for another ESO Network show.
Hi, everyone. It's Nathan, host of the 42cast. Our second season is just underway, and it's never been a better time to check in on what we're doing. Whether it's talking about the latest movies from the MCU, watching the Arrowverse shows, talking about classics such as Star Trek and Doctor Who, playing 8-bit video games, or sharing celebrity interviews, the 42cast has something for everyone. So give it a listen and discover why it's the ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything. The 42cast is a proud member of the ESO Network.
So, on to the trivia. The executive producer, JMS, later played down the part of Dral in the series. Straczynski explained that a person with access to high-tech science heightened the danger of the Due Machina, the god out of the machine, the idea that all problems can be solved with advanced technology. If that were to happen, the human element in the show would be lost, and Babylon 5 was about people. So that's why we don't see anything about this as such ever again. Or he doesn't come in and solve problems and fix things. A bit like Superman, really, isn't it? Once you got him.
Yeah, or like the everything. Prophets, just making 2,600 ships disappear through the wormhole.
Very true. Yeah.
So, Sean, any Star Trek connections this week?
As a matter of fact, we do. We have a huge one because Chip Heller, who played Rowdy number one, played Warrior number two in Star Trek The Next Generation, Loud as a Whisper.
Fantastic. Well done for getting that one. Yeah, I instantly recognized him, of course. I mean, I knew as soon as I saw him, I thought, that's the guy from Loud as a Whisper.
Yeah, that was Warrior number two in Loud as a Whisper. Yeah, yeah. But wait, there's more. We've got Ron Canada as Captain Ellis Pierce. He is currently in the Trek Untold podcast, but he has also played in TNG, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager. In TNG, he was Martin Ben Beck in Masterpiece Society. He was Chipuk in Rules of Engagement on Deep Space Nine, and on Voyager, he was Fessick in Juggernaut.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I saw this podcast that he does. I'm going to have to look into that and give it a quick download and see what it's all about, because it sounds like he talks about the behind the scenes of Voyager and TNG, obviously both of which he was on. So, yeah, that'd be good. And I do like Ron Canada. He's popped up in a few things. He was in...
very recognizable.
Yeah, he's in Tom Clancy, the Tom Clancy thing, the Jack Ryan. He popped up in there, and I went, oh, I know him. And he's one of those recognisable guys who just keeps popping up everywhere and putting in such a great convincing... such a great actor, they named a whole country after him.
Right. That's true, very true.
What's it like living inside...
Ron Canada. That reminds me of the joke. Who is the thirstiest man in the world? The man who drank Canada Dry.
Oh.
And for those who don't know, Canada Dry is a ginger ale brand.
We used to have that over here. Well, I think we still do it.
And pretty I'm sure good. There's a dirty joke we could tell, but we're not going for
it. Yes, moving swiftly on. ratings. So, IMDb gave this 8.1, so just 0.1 above last week's episode. Sean, what did you rate this?
Well, this is the exciting conclusion to part one, and it does give us a lot of information, fills in some gaps. It blows up those aliens real good. We have analyzed your language, and we're going to speak very strangely, those guys. So that was fun. I don't know what to give it. I gave last week's episode a 4. Let me give this a 4.25 because it concludes it. We get all the answers to all the questions that we had. It doesn't have the weird pacing like the previous episode. So yeah, I think 4.25 sounds good.
That's an interesting score because up until now, 4.25 was your highest score ever for Signs and Portents.
I remember.
So you are equaling your highest score for this episode.
Well, we're getting into the really good stuff.
True.
Dan, what did you make this?
Yeah, it fills in all the gaps. It answers the questions. We find out who came out of the jump gate all the way up to why Dral is there in the first place and what he's going to do. We find out that she's married to Franz. Fuck Franz.
What kind of name is that anyway?
Yeah, what kind of name is that? I really like the Malari line about he wanted to die on his feet when he was a young Centauri doing something noble. And he figured, you know, this is the best way of doing it. And the kind of giddy delight he took by flying down to the surface of the planet. And, you know, he's being piloted like by a madman. He's just sitting there going, it's just brilliant. It's wonderful. Ivanova, you know, just leaning in to tell him what's going on. She just goes, boom, 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 boom.
Find something down there, didn't you? Something valuable, perhaps? I wish to remind you that my government has contributed substantial amounts of money to this station. We are entitled to an equal share of anything you find down there.
Ambassador, do you really want to know what's going on down there right now?
Yes, absolutely. Boom. Boom, boom, boom. Boom, boom. Boom.
Have a nice day.
You know, that little scene where he asks Sinclair as well, what's going on? Are you going to tell me? And he just goes, no, and just walks off. That's it. No.
That was classic.
Nothing. No, like, witty dialogue again. It's just straight into that. It's a lot of action, but I don't know. Is it as good as the last week? Does it suffer that two-part problem that we have in Star Trek, where the second episode doesn't quite live up to the hype? I don't know. I wasn't as convinced. But I don't want to go right down to 3.5, so I'm going to give my first 3.75.
I'm going to be exactly the same, because I think it was exactly the same reasons, Dan. I don't think it was quite as good as last week's. I think this Ivanova quote was good, but not as good as the last one, and I think really that's what tips the scale. Otherwise, it's pretty much the same as the original episode, as the first episode. So, good, but just lacking a little something. And I think it was a bit sort of anticlimactic. I mean, the build-up was good, but then when we got to this episode, I think it was just, yeah, okay, the guy who was, you know, brought onto the ship for no other reason other than to eventually go and plug himself in, was plugged in, and Lise was alive, and there was no sort of, it all finished happily ever after type of thing, which a lot of the times I like, but can be quite boring. If Lise died, might have put a nice bit of a twist on the end, but we didn't really know her, so it wouldn't have meant anything. But yeah, no, as a second part of a two-parter, it was just as good as the first part, just lacked a little bit of something. But still a good episode, and still world-building, and it's good. So yeah, 3.75, not quite as good as the 3.88 as I gave it last week. So that is the end of this episode. Don't forget, you can get this podcast from Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Castbox, Pocket Casts, Breaker, Radio Public, Amazon Music, apparently, and the fabulous ESO Network, your station for all things geek. And anywhere else you get your podcasts. And if you're listening to this, you're already getting it. So there you go. Join us again next week as we will be discussing Season 1, Episode 18, Babylon Squared. Zathras.
Zathras.
Not Zathras. Zathras.
Sorry. Yep. My pronunciation. Sorry.
So if we go down there, it blows. If we don't, it blows anyway, just a little later. It's a good thing I'm Russian. We're used to hopeless situations.
If you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send in some feedback to the epsilon3@gmail.com. That's 3 spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search for the Epsilon 3.
End.
Lights and good night.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.